Hi, everybody, and welcome back to yet another cracking installment of the Matt Brown Show. This is the Secrets of Fail series, where we're talking about our business failures in all their ugly glory. And with us on the line is the CEO of Revelia, Jay Ackerman. Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and it's going to be a great episode, I'm sure. So why don't you kick us off with the elevator pitch?
Sure.
What do we need to know?
Yeah, what do you need to know about Revelia? So Revelia is a healthcare data and analytics company, and we work to support health plans and providers to succeed in the world of value-based care. And we do that with an intelligent workflow application that's infused with artificial intelligence to capture clinical data on members or patients and to be able to extract information on diseases that they're carrying, kind of open gaps in care, all in the pursuit of ensuring that value-based care is the winning delivery model over fee-for-service. So we want to help patients stay healthy and stay out of a costly care setting.
So who are your customers typically?
Customers are predominantly insurance plans, those that participate in Medicare, Medicaid, and the ACA marketplace, which President Obama set up some years ago. And so all the members inside of those insurance programs are covered under value-based care programs, where the government is working with private insurers to create a better partnership between the insurance company and the providers who deliver care to ensure that those members are staying healthy.
So what is your story of fail for our audience around the world today?
Well, being a CEO of a company now for going on 7 years, I've got a lot of failure stories. But the one I think I'll call out today is back in 2018, we realized that the software application that we had built to support these demanding customers, these insurance companies, wasn't built for scale, wasn't a true SaaS application. And we needed to tear it apart and rebuild it. And it was literally the scenario of docking the boat on the shore and burning that boat. And we had no point of return. And we had basically a 4-month window to re-architect our entire application before we hit a critical cycle at the start of 2019. And so ultimately is a story of success. But when I call it a failure story, we were a small company at that time, and we were evangelizing in a market to convince these large insurance companies that there was a better way to do this work and to do it with software. And we had an early adopter who believed in our application. But when we implemented that, we launched that new software, we thought it came just in time. For them, it came just too late. And we lost the one customer that truly believed in what we were doing at a time when others weren't asking for it. And which was a real kind of kick in the gut, because we knew that was the type of customer that we could serve for a long, long time.
So what did you learn from that experience, Jay?
Yeah, so there's a lot of learnings from it. I mean, I think, you know, when we were building software, we had a view that we'd build it, we'd deliver it, and the customer didn't really need to understand what was going on behind the curtain. And so we learned the lesson of transparency. And when you're going to embark on that level of change, kind of radical change in a short window, you've got to bring your customers along with you. And I think we contemplated that at the time, believed in what we were doing, had conviction around what we were doing, and we embarked on it. But number one, that's a lesson. And I think if we had done that with this customer, for example, we would have had more latitude from them, more understanding as they were adopting and experiencing a brand new application in the most intense period of their year. So that's probably one of the first lessons. I think the second is around conviction for the choices that you're making. And so we were embarking on this reinvention of our software in the short window, as I mentioned earlier. And a lot of people inside of our company didn't understand why we were doing that, why we would do it in such a short window, and communicating effectively to your team members ensures that you have 100% support, 100% buy-in, you know, when you're trying to execute in a short window. The last thing you need is, you know, a few of your team members kind of talking amongst themselves and wondering if the captain is truly crazy to have them embarking on such a change. And so, you know, when you think you've messaged, you've got a message again, you've got a message again, you've got a message again, and ensuring that people really understand why you're doing that, that you've actually contemplated the risks that that you're accepting, that we haven't ignored them, that we aren't blind to them. So that'd be the second major learning for me around that failure.
So, Jay, tell us, if you could go back in time, what would you do differently?
Wow, okay. Yeah. So if I was to relive that moment, we're back in 2018 and we're getting ready to launch the rebuild. Mm-hmm. I think if we were back in 2018, ready to launch the rebuild, there'd probably be a few things. I was talking about communication on the front end. So one, we'd embark on some focus groups with our customers, pull them together, make sure they understand. We understand what works for them, what doesn't work for them, have an opportunity to talk about why we are considering a rebuild of the application and what we want to accomplish and how that impacts them and ultimately delivers a better experience and outcome for them. So I think number one, I would start with there. So they know that they have a business partner that's investing for the long term, that's being thoughtful about them and trying to ultimately deliver a better experience and outcome. I would do the same thing with our employees because we're asking them to do a lot in a short period of time. We set up a command room like you've heard people do in areas when major projects, short window of time, lot going on. We set up a command room inside of our office where we would all go in there for updates and we were tracking our timeline. But we'd do probably more on the front end. Staying with that group of employees, I would probably actually do something different around incentives to encourage them to make sure that there's a personal win in there for each of them as they're embarking on something that's hard. It's going to take more time away from their families. And remember, back in 2000, end of 18, beginning of 19, as we were launching this pre-COVID, everybody's in the office, right? So we were asking people to spend a lot of time away from spouses, partners, friends, helping us relaunch it. I do those two things. In addition to that, what would I do back then? I think as we rolled it out, we would have probably deployed some individuals into our top customers. At the time, we're a B2B company, large contracts. We don't have hundreds of thousands of customers. Today, we have 80 health plans, large, large health plans, big dollars with them, but a small number. And so we could have put people on site with our top customers as we were rolling out that new application to train, adopt, and troubleshoot. Those are probably three things that I'm back in. If I take a time machine back to 2018, beginning of 19, I would do over.
Jay, what is your advice to other entrepreneurs when in the context of failure?
Yeah, in the context of failure, I have a couple of things that I fundamentally believe in, and they've played out over and over, and they relate to periods of challenge and failure. So, one, I generally believe the problem is never as big as it initially appears, and it's rarely the case when like you experience a problem and you're like, oh, like this means the end of our company. This means the end of what we're doing. It might look really bleak in the moment. So one, believe in that. Take a step back and breathe and let your head kind of calm while you figure it out. That's number one. The second, related to people working together, solve a problem. The other thing that I believe is true is that individuals can accomplish far more than they think is possible. And so when we had conviction about making this change in late 18 to roll it out beginning in 19, I had conviction. I had belief that our team could do it. I had belief that our team would solve it and find a way to shorten the cycle. And they did it. So those two things, I've shared that a lot. I share that all the time. And I would share that with current CEOs, future CEOs, and I would just ask you to kind of keep those two things in the back of your mind. The third, around solving a problem and facing failure, be all in. be all in and know that your teammates, your employees, probably your investors are going to look for signs of whether or not you have belief that you can solve it and you can lead the team forward. And if you're not all in and you're waffling in your decision making, then you can't expect others to follow you. And so everything that you do, you've got to show that you believe you can get to the to that right destination, that right outcome. That would be the third. The fourth, we talk about timeouts inside of our company. Like we will kind of, we'll use some sports analogies, like throw the flag on the field, stop the play, and allow the team to huddle and think through whether there's a different path. And think about the lexicon in your business that allows you to have that timeout where you can kind of breathe deeply, think about it, and potentially kind of start to move in a different direction. So that's those are a few kind of general pieces of advice that I think will cross almost any industry. And the first two points I shared, I've believed in those for the last 25 plus years in business, and they've rarely, if ever, failed me.
So Jay, when is your book coming out?
Well, I think the book will, maybe there's a book contract when Revelier finally fulfills its full ambitions in the marketplace that we're in.
Does a company ever fulfill its true ambitions or its like its goals? It's like, there's always another level, isn't it?
No, and hopefully you continue to rethink what those goals should be. And, you know, we keep trying to move the goalposts a little further back, you know, continue to challenge the team and all of us to do more.
Yeah. It's interesting. The first point that you said, I want to rephrase it, but nothing's ever as good or as bad as it seems. And I can't remember who told it to me. It was definitely on my show, but it's something that echoes with me or resonates with me when you say nothing's ever as bad. It's also nothing's ever as good as it seems, because the moment you think things are really good, sometimes that's when the wheels come off, as I've been in that situation, you know? But I want to also double click on that. And you've said it also different words on number two there. But as a CEO, like, I've personally found that dealing with the emotional knee-jerk reaction when things go wrong, like one day you wake up and you're like, we actually need to rebuild this entire infrastructure. Otherwise, we're never going to scale. Like, it's like, damn, like that's a thing. Or you may, and you said you lost that, that customer that was a dream customer and you really didn't want to lose them, but you lost them anyway because of it. And so, you know, those are your contexts, but we're all dealing with this sort of emotional journey, aren't we, as CEOs, as leaders, where something happens, and whether that's in our control or not, we still have to deal with the repercussions of that. Yeah. And sometimes when we're emotional, because we are humans after all, we make decisions sometimes that are emotionally led and they're not rational. So the difference is, and this is the question, which is, how do you personally as a CEO just pause?
That's a hard one, and one I've gotten better at with time, which is not always easy. So first, I've taken up meditation, which is just a daily morning meditation to start the day a little bit calmer and more centered. And that does help me roll with things throughout the day. Secondly, I have found that it is okay to say we need to take a break and we're going to leave this problem alone and come back. Almost any problem that confronts you, you don't have to solve it right in the moment. You can leave that problem on the table for a little while. And I've gotten better at saying, I got to go take a walk around the block. I'm going to clear my head and then I'm going to come back to it. And what I've found when I take that walk around that block, or I get on the treadmill for 30 minutes and come back to that problem, the problem's still there. First of all, it didn't walk out the door, and leave me, it's still there. It's waiting. But my head's a little quieter. It's a little calmer. And that step to breathe, that step to kind of let my brain shift for a minute helps. So that's how I do it. I'm better at it than I was 20 years ago. I'm not perfect. I have those moments when I can tell that there's an angel and a demon here, right? And a devil, and they're fighting each other. And I'll see myself with the knee jerk, like, we got to solve it in the moment. And I know that we're not going to get the best answer when I do that.
Mm. Yeah, the today's problems will be tomorrow's problems for sure. You can sleep on it for a night.
Yeah.
So, Jay, are there any tools, books, or resources you recommend other entrepreneurs should use on their personal journey?
Yeah, I pride myself on being a continuous learner. So I am I'm a big fan of podcasts. I listen to podcasts on the way into work and the way home from work every day. And a couple that I'll call out that I like in terms of general business context, Masters of Scale. Love that one. Always talking to great leaders, entrepreneurs, founders, success stories and failures. So Masters of Scale is a big one. I also, I like Fortune's leadership series. So they have a podcast, Leadership Next, which is another great one. In terms of reading, I'm actually reading a book right now. I thought I might have it here. I don't think so. It's done by the former head of McKinsey, where they isolated the traits of the top CEOs across the globe. And they did extensive research on what is the common kind of unifying characteristic across industry, across size of company, spanning literally every corner of the globe, from companies that are well known like JP Morgan to companies in Japan, Netherlands that may not be kind of household names for you and I. And it's a phenomenal book. It's one I'm in the middle of. And one of the things that, they call out in terms of a defining kind of CEO characteristic is clarity of vision. And like true clarity of vision on where they're going, why they're going, and what they're trying to disrupt and how they're trying to tackle it. But that's a book I'm currently reading.
Very good. I think you missed a podcast in the called The Map Around Show. Just one.
Yeah. Well, I figured that one was kind of an obvious one to all of your listeners. I mean, if they weren't listening, they're not going to be listening to you and I, right?
Well, now you pushed them all to Masters of Scale, dude. Thank you. Fuck it.
Well, on Masters of Scale, I'm going to make sure I pump up. When they invite me over, I'm going to make sure I pump up the Map Around Show.
Yeah, of course. It's fine. I'm bigger than them anyway. That's cool. It's fine. Well, look, thank you for your perspectives, and thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your story about failure, Jay. That's important, obviously, for all of us as entrepreneurs to get over it and actually, stop living our amazing successes every day, because, failure didn't happen on that journey.
Yeah, look, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. I am fairly reflective. And so those moments, I don't forget them, although they're hard to kind of relive from time to time.
They are hard. Yeah. But thank you for your time today. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you all again soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt.